Okay, now we'll hear our speaker's experience on step 12.
All right, so I'm going to ask you the dentist thing. If you can't hear me, just raise your hand. So I am honored that I get to spend this weekend with you. You have filled my spirit, you know, and God knew exactly what I needed months ago when I got the request and the invitation to come here. So all of you, thank you for making me feel so welcome and at home.
Oh my gosh.
And Mike and Sherry, for just being so loving and nurturing, and thank you. And my buddy Dennis. So step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message and to practice these principles in all our affairs, not just with alcoholics, not just when it's convenient, not when my ass is on fire, but in all my affairs, right? And I just was flipping through the book and it opened up, and you know, I'm a little wordy. I like having those definitions. And so, you know, what this book has given me is a design for living. I was always going to school looking for the answer. Like, did I miss it? Like, you know, bugging the teacher and always sitting in the back of the class thinking I missed something. Or we moved around a lot, so that kind of added to that. Like, fifth grade, they told my mom I was stupid, so they put me in the classes with the disabled. And it wasn't back then, because I'm a little bit older than some of you. The classes were kids that really needed to have a lot of special attention. You know, I was in a class with a child with cerebral palsy who couldn't move in his chair, Down syndrome, things like that, and me, because the teacher told my mom I was stupid. And I already knew I was stupid, so that just added on to the stuff, right? So I was always looking for, give me the info so I can relax and feel comfortable. And when I, as a teenager, I started dating guys from all different religions, and I'd go to the temple, I'd go to Catholic church, I'd go here, thinking, I intuitively was seeking something, but I wasn't finding it, you know. I'm sitting at the Catholic church with the boyfriend in the back, and, you know, the one's writing their laundry, their shopping list, and one's going out and doing crap when they come in, and then go to confession, and then come back, and I'm just like, what is this? I find Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew I was in the right place, but it's, and, you know, after a few years, I was still looking. Something was missing. You know, I was going to meetings, and I was getting more and more disturbed. And it wasn't anybody else in the meetings. And I'm sure other people said things, but I just could not. I read this book in many meetings and would pontificate and sound good, but it wasn't resonating. I didn't have that. And I opened this page up, and it says, a design for living, right? And I have a definition there, a plan, a pattern, a purpose, something skillful and methodically planned. It requires time and study. And that's what this whole book is about, right? It requires time and study. It's methodically planned. I know in my heart, bless you, that this book was divinely inspired. Bill didn't just all of a sudden wake up one day and say, I'm going to write this book, and I got all the answers, right? And it was funny when Dennis said, you know, that about step 11 just earlier, that they knew all about him being selfish, dishonest, and self-seeking before he did. They knew all this about before we were born. They wrote this book. Pretty much most of us in this room, right? So where did that come from? How could this book that was written 80 plus years ago use words that resonate with all of us into action, working with others? Whole chapter. You know, the last chapter had numerous steps in it. And now they're telling me nothing's going to ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Family members, spouses, doctors, lawyers, law enforcement, whatever you want to go to, right? You can secure their confidence when others fail. And then they said, you know, remember, they're very ill. So that's to help me when I'm dealing with situations, when you're dealing with situations, to remember that when they lash out or they act, that's why I did this inventory, because I could see how my fear and sickness came outward. So now I have a little bit more understanding, and I'm not going to take it so personal. You know, when someone I work with, early on it was easy, bless you. It was often that I could get into that head sometimes. Look at all I've done. I can't believe it, you know. And now it's like, it's okay. It's got nothing to do with me. And every once in a while, it'll crop up that thought, getting that. And it's got nothing to do with the whole situation. It's probably some other stuff coming out sideways, right? So I had great teachers who were hard chargers, right? I had people that they said, this is a life or death errand. You go where you are called. You know, I'm not going to leave my sister's deathbed because someone calls me and says, hey, can you speak right now? And, you know, that's not what it's saying. What it's saying is, you know, I do the best I can in all situations to show up. You know, people have been coming up to me. You all have been coming up and saying, thank you for coming up here. You flew up here? You don't live around here? Oh, my God, that's so wonderful. No, it was like, you don't know how honored and how much my spirit, that wasn't even a thought. The biggest thought I had was because my animal farm sitter came down with COVID a month ago. And so, of course, the first thought when she calls me is, what about me? And the next thought is, God, I know you got this. Okay. So I didn't worry about it for 2 weeks. And once in a while, I would crop in. And then, you know, I called her in about 10 days before she was supposed to come up. And I wasn't going to call anybody up here and tell them. I was like, no, God, you're going to make this happen. So I didn't call anybody and say, hey, I want to put you on notice. I was like, all right, God, and I just kept on praying. And then she had a negative test 10 days before, and I'm like, okay, God, what do you want me to do? So I started to line up back up, right? And then she thought the weekend was next week, and so when I called her on Tuesday, because I hadn't heard from her, she's like, you sound a little stressful. I'm like, yeah, I was calling about the COVID test, you little petri dish. And she's like, I got two negative codes. It's not a big deal. Why? I go, because I'm leaving. It's this week. Oh, it's this week. Oh, and that was Tuesday. So, you know, I'm acquainted with a lot of drinkers. It says maybe you're not, right? Because this is a different time. I'm acquainted with a lot of them and a lot of other folks that have other addictions. And I just try to go. I go to all different types of meetings, groups, and I share my experience and my insights from working this program. And I just go to AA meetings, right? They're all AA meetings. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Big Book Step Study is just a format for how to do your particular meeting, right? Just like a men's meeting or a co-ed meeting or a, you know, an old timers meeting or whatever. So I go to AA. I love Alcoholics Anonymous because it saved my life. This book showed me how to really embrace life and to enjoy life and to have a purpose, right? So, and part of it is to be helpful is our only aim. So, I can be this basher sometimes, but it tells me, you know, there's all these directions on what to do, what not to do. And I will tell you, I've pretty much done all the ones it says not to do a few times. You know, in this, especially early on, charging in, I'm going to sit, recently I let someone use my car who was, you know, relatively newly sober, and they backed into a telephone pole. So what does that tell me? Wasn't it we who set the ball rolling? So So I get a lot of phone calls from family members or friends or, I have this person, you know, you'd be a great sponsor for them. I'm like, yeah, you know, we're not doing that sponsor fix up. You know, the dating, the setting up, you know, I'd love to talk to them. Here, give them my number. Because, you know, they need to, if someone might like me, they might not be ready. You know? So I share my experience. I try to meet people where they're at. I try my best. Some days I'm better. Depends on where they're at and how long I've known them. You know, I've had people that I've done work with and, you know, I'm like the hard one, right? So if somebody's got issues, you should go talk to Veronica. They're like, you know, because no, I'm not mean, but I can be pretty. Like, did you pray? How's the writing going? You know, like, you know, those are like the first couple of questions, because I know what's going on. When, like you were sharing, when there's stuff going on, the answer to that is they're not praying, they're not writing, and they're probably not going to so many meetings. Oh, you got a new girlfriend? You got a new boyfriend? Oh, you get this. Oh, I get this job, but I got to make this money. You're working 60 hours a week. You're 6 months sober. And how many meetings have you been to this week? So, you know, but people also trust me. You can't even tell you. So, you know, I talk to a halfway house. I can't tell you how many of them because they relapse or whatever. And then they're, you know, you should hear the words they call me. And sometimes I take it on, you know, oh, you're the worst. You're so controlling. Nobody likes you. They say really, sometimes they say really mean things. And sometimes it'll hit for a few minutes, and then I'll back off, or I'll call somebody. I'll do a 10-step, and it's not true. Yeah, maybe I didn't handle it right. And, oh, you know, it's the hardest is to go back to these women and make amends. Oh, you know, because they're like, you know, they're like 3 months sober, and they're like, yeah. You know? And I do. I'll go back. But that is a bigger demonstration to people that they can trust me. And that's what this is all about, because I need someone to trust me just a hair if they're going to let me possibly help them. Now, I don't know who in this room or wherever I've been that I might help by saying something. And that's why, you know, I show up when I'm asked to show up. And I go to places, I travel and go to different meetings, not even when I'm invited. Don't come in. No. I mean, like, I just show up at places, right? And people are like, wow, hey, you know, oh yeah, so I decided to take a ride and, you know, show up at this meeting. Or I'll call my friends and go, hey, I'm thinking about driving over. You want to, you know. I need to come to these meetings as much as someone else may need to come to these meetings. I need to come. But my job is to carry a message of hope and recovery. So I go to a lot of different meetings. You know, it's great going to big book meetings, but I'm fishing in a little pond. And I'm not even talking about that I need to go find sponsees, cause, or protégés or mentees or whatever you want to call them, right? Because it doesn't say sponsee in the book. Women that I can help and that can help me. Because that's where I heard the message, that feeling of that little teeny mustard seed, was another woman came to a different meeting. It wasn't even this fellowship, but she was in AA, and she was a member of the Norton Big Book Step Study meeting. And she was willing to go to other meetings, she didn't beat anybody over the head. She just shared her experience, and the words that she spoke about her experience, I knew she knew what she was talking about. So, you know, there's all different. I pray before I pick up the phone. I pray while I'm on the phone. There'd be blah blah blah. I'm like, God, please help me say the right thing, because I want to go, are you effing kidding me? You know, like, you just filed a lawsuit against somebody because what? Did you talk to anybody? Oh yeah, I talked to my mother, and you know, she's crazier than the woman I'm working with. I'm like, and why is this? Oh, because you have no money and you need to buy a car. Oh, because you're mad because you didn't like the way she said something to you. Did you lie to these attorneys? Oh, you told them it was a pit bull and it's not. So it just, you know, like some days I'm like, ooh. So I'm praying. God help me. Just help me. So I'm friendly with the family. I try not to get, I'll be friendly, helpful to the family. I'll listen to some of the information if the person's using, or if I'm looking for somebody that I can't find. I'll validate their fear, their anger. But I always, you know, suggest that, you know, they kind of do some stuff to help themselves too, you know, be it Al-Anon, therapy, whatever, go to church, see their, whatever it is. But I kind of try to nudge them in a way, validate it, and if, you know, they're stuck on this, I can't believe they, why they can't stop, I might tell them a little bit of, you know, about alcoholism that they don't seem to understand. I just kind of pray and try to be helpful. I cannot tell you how many women have come through my halfway house or through the meetings over the years that I've pissed off, and then a month, a year, I had somebody call me a couple last week sitting outside of a detox, and she was hating me when she left because I was the worst thing ever. I was a controller. I'm blah, 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 you know, talking me to the world. And I was like, okay, yeah, you can say that. You know it's not true. You know, and I'm not like telling her, don't ever call me again. And I was the first person she called, and she was bawling, and she's like, I feel so bad. I'm so sorry that I talked to you. I'm sorry I hurt you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm like, it's okay. Where are you? I'm sitting in the detox, and I don't want to go in. It's okay. I'm so glad you called. I'm so glad you called me. That's what this is about. Because if I'm coming at people from a different, not on the same level, if I'm taking things personal and I'm getting all pissy with you because you're not doing what I want, or you said something mean, and maybe even said something mean that might be a little bit true or a big part true, right? That's for you to look at. But I got to remember, what was I like when I was in my untreatedism? I was fearful. I was a wounded person. I hurt people. I ran away. I justified everything. And she, I said to her, I go, I love you. Go into that detox. And she didn't go in right then. And she left. And she had somebody with her. And he called me. And I'm like, give him my phone number. I want him to text me when you go in. And she called me back. And I'm like, why don't you want to go in? Oh, I feel so embarrassed. I said, but you know you can't do this alone. You know, and she sat out there all night in her car because they didn't have a bed. And I tried to call her, and I'm pretty sure she's in. It's not because of me, but maybe because I maybe might be one of the only people in her life that has never yelled at her and belittled her and beat her up about all the mistakes that she may have made. Right? Who told me, who showed me how to do that? Because, you know, where'd my parents, that didn't come from my household. You know, the biggest thing in my house is we don't talk about anything. And if you question something or you disagree with something, you were always made wrong. So I'm not talking about anything. So, you know, this design for living, but it starts with me. I have to do all of this to get up here and to help others, you know. And again, like I said, depending on where they're at and stuff like that, depends on, you know, sometimes a little bit more sarcastic, you know. Especially when they've been around for a while, and they, you know, and I've said to a couple of them, you know, they're like, oh, but I believe in God. I don't know, I need this. I'm like, really? Yeah, I don't really think you have a relationship with God. Because, you know, it just, again, it just depends. Sometimes I might be a little fresh, but, oh, I've pissed them off. I go, yeah, it's better to give a resentment than to get one, isn't it? Right? You know, another one of those wise-ass comments. But the truth is, I said, you might have gone to church and you understand these ideas a lot better than I ever have. But there's a glass wall between you and that power. It's like walking by the bakery. You can smell it and you stick your nose up to the glass, but you cannot taste those treats. I said, that's where you're at right now. Because you can't get it. You know it, and that is even feels more painful. So I try my best, and I make all the mistakes, all of them. And the only difference between me today and me a while back was I'm pretty quick to look at those mistakes and try to take responsibility, you know, repair them if I've been a jerk, and learn from them, right? And I've got God now, so lots of times I'm praying, and somebody just told me a quote, and I'm stealing it. It says, I don't get nearly enough credit for the things I don't say. I am taking that down to Florida, and I'm going to pretend it's mine. No, I'm kidding. You know? And, you know, do you realize that I just bit my tongue when you just said, right? No, but, you know, and it tells me never avoid these responsibilities. Never. And one of these lines in here that used to, like, perplex me early on was, you know, because all I hear in meetings, service, 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 do service, do service, do service. And then it says the minute you put your service work on the service plane, the alcohol commences to rely on you instead of God. I'm like, what? It says service. I'm supposed to, you know, service. I looked it up. Service is to do for someone else. So the minute I start doing for someone else more about their recovery than they do, I'm stepping in as God. I will walk, and I tell this to them, I'll walk with you, but I can't carry you, and I can't put more energy into you finding your path than you're willing to. So, and I don't get mad at them. I'll blow them out of the water. I can't, you know, again, I don't fire anybody. People just, I've had one or two people that had some real serious other issues that were very, almost dangerous. And I've had to say, I don't think that I'm going to be the one to be able to help you. But I tell people early on, listen, we're going to spend a little bit of time reading this book and getting to know each other. And a lot of it's so that we can get to know each other. And you can see if this is the right thing for you and if I'm the person to help you. And if not, and if you don't want to do this, it's okay. I'll still be friends. You can call me. I'm here. You know, and that's just to kind of give them a little traction. Also, you know, people kind of, sometimes they just disappear because they don't want to do the work. And that's okay. It's not a waste of time. If I sent here and read all this stuff with them, it's not a waste of time if they got to step four or they did part of the fifth step or they did all the fifth step or they disappear. Whatever amount they do and they invite me in, I learn more about myself. Be it an hour, 5 days, 5 weeks, whatever it is, I learn more about myself. And I tell them, and you know, like my sponsors would say things like that to me, and I'd be like, yeah, whatever. But I didn't realize how true it was. So I'm almost out of time, so I'm going to manage this up. But so on page 100, it says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in spiritual progress, right? Follow the dictates of a higher power, not money, not, you know, some relationship or some accolades. You know, like I have a job that's kind of impressive to some people. And I used to be, you know, like, yeah, you know who I am, right? And because I didn't have very much self-worth, so I thought you might like me if I did things or accomplished things, right? So fire dictates of a higher power. And no matter, and, you know, you presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances are, okay? So in the We Agnostic, it says, there's a thing that says, no later vicissitude will shake it. My cornerstone. So I have lived in a better situation no matter what the circumstances are. And that has been true. And I love the paragraph that talks about, you know, the Good Samaritan, right? So Jesus was the Good Samaritan. I'm not giving you a Bible lesson, but I looked it up because I didn't know what it was. You know, kind of heard it. So the Samaritans and the Jews hated each other. And there was a Samaritan, there was a Jew on the side, he was beat up, he was, you know, robbed, naked, and the Samaritan goes to help him. All people that, other Jews, other people walked by him, religious people, and they left him on the side of the road. And this guy picked him up, and people are like, why are you helping him? He's our enemy. He needs my help. And that's what it is. I go wherever it is that God leads me. I know I'm going to be protected. I share my experience. I don't have to share and have myself the great war story so that you think I'm the best thing ever, right? Because that was when I was just going to meetings where people were talking about their stories. You know, I got 7 DUIs, I did this, I stole that, I did that, I know this, I hung out with the mafia, blah, blah, blah. You know, of course, I want to have a better story. I just talk about my experience, and I talk about, you said it the first night, maybe the Saturday, what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. And I talk a little bit about that in a way that I feel expresses how my insides were. What I was like. I hated myself. I hated the world. I wanted to die, with or without booze. Okay, what happened? I hit a bottom. I stumbled into, I heard something, and I was willing enough to just walk a little bit and follow it a little bit from behind. And then I became more willing to do some work. And what it's like now, you know, I used to scalp tickets. You would see me running outside the Boston Garden, running from the police, hiding tickets in my underwear so I wouldn't get arrested, living paycheck to paycheck, hanging out with really dangerous people. My mom died in a nursing home run by the state because she didn't have any money, and I knew that was what my life was going to be. Sober, I went back to school. I got a scholarship. I got my doctorate. I have no financial worries. So, you know, and that's not, I'm not telling you all these things to say, look at all this stuff, but I believed I was going to end up homeless and living in a nursing home and dying in a nursing home because nobody was going to care. And that's not what my life is today. And I don't wake up terrified, what's going to happen to me now? Because of this work. And I can bring that message to others. You know, so my job is to be of maximum helpfulness to others. So don't hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. Doesn't mean don't hesitate, you know, like, go get in your car. I don't care if it's more than, you know, I can't tell you how many times Dennis has come off Cape in the summertime because someone has asked him to help at a meeting or to help somebody that I know about. So I know there's probably one or two more times than that. Okay. I don't want to drive in the traffic on the Cape. Hell no. So I told you that last, and I'm going to say it again, and then I'm going to close. But this is the deal, right? By looking at all of my bad stuff, that started to heal me, and I started to forgive myself for being the worst person ever. And you hold on to that dark past and use it to help others, and you will be separated and lifted from that, and it will not, I promise, it will not haunt you as it did when you were drinking, or not drinking and not healing it. And that, because there is no greater happiness, there is no more feeling of God, making amends and setting things straight brings me that connection. But helping somebody save their own life, there is no greater gift, period. So I do not hesitate to show up, period. That doesn't mean I have to be codependent and do everything for everybody. No. I pray, ask God, what is mine to do? That's my staple prayer. What is mine to do? And with that, I can help them avert misery and death. And I know God will protect me. I am protected from alcohol, drug, and destructive, my self-destructiveness. So I am so honored to be here with you all and with my friend Dennis. Thank you.
Thank you, Veronica. That was amazing. Good, very good to hear you all weekend. Feeling pretty peaceful. Very blessed to be here today and the whole weekend. So, talk about an education, working with others. I love when, for me, that being someone's sponsor. I think before I did the steps, a guy asked me to be a sponsor. So obviously, you're not going to believe this, but he might have had self-seeking motives. So he was sober like probably 3 days and started smoking crack, and I've never seen him ever again, unfortunately. So, but I found out that had little to do with me, and then it was kind of suggested that, why don't you get through this work? And in a very nice way, they said, you really don't have anything to offer till then. And, you know, if you asked a question in my group, you were getting the truth whether you liked it or not. And that was definitely the truth. I can't offer something that I don't have. I can't tell somebody how to fly a plane if I don't know how to fly a plane. So, and this is life and death. And I've had more than one guy died that I've worked with, for sure. And that has a lot to do with one thing. One thing that Alcoholics Acts have a very difficult time doing, and that's called telling the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I walked into that first Big Book meeting, I heard a strange language. It was called the truth. That was foreign to me. I'd never heard anything like it in my entire life. So when it came to this step, I thought I knew everything about working with guys, but I didn't. And things have developed, things have changed with working with other men. And it works, I will tell you this, it works for me. Not only obviously, it keeps us sober. That's the most obvious thing. Why do we do it? I don't do it to stay sober. It's just, to me, it's a benefit. I do it because in step three, my sponsor asked me one thing. He says, if you complete this work, are you willing to help somebody else? So when I hear questions like, why the hell are you doing this, that, and everything? Well, I don't know. I got a pretty good life, and I didn't do it. I'm not going to say I don't deserve it, because, yeah, I do. I deserve good things. Why? You put the effort in, you get the payoff. Again, no one's going to fool me. Alcoholics and addicts, they love the payoff. I know I do. And like I clearly pointed out, when in North Carolina, where that girl said that, it's the greatest thing ever to go to work for God. You know what I mean? It really is. So when I said to him in step three, I'll agree to it. I'm sure a part of me is like, yeah, but on my terms. You know what I mean? When it's convenient, Dale, I'll do it. You know, well, that has all changed. There's nothing I won't do for another alcoholic. And the only thing I would say is I'm willing to go as far as they're willing to go. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing the old codependent sponsor thing. Y'all going to do this, you're going to do that. And the line in the book says it better than anybody that I've ever heard. Here's the spiritual kit of tools for your inspection. How's that look? I mean, and if you're on the other side of that, you're like, wow, this isn't on him. It's on the pigeon, you know, and so for me, it comes down to the immunity. The one thing I like to talk about when I meet a new man, my number one thing is I don't say to him, let's say a quick prayer, let's pray to God, Jesus Christ. None of that is ever brought up. I just say, let's hear your story. Because new men and new women, there's one thing. It's not that they want to feel important, but I believe they want to be heard. Mm-hmm. They want to be heard. They want someone to actually care. I don't know where these people come from. And when I sponsor a guy and they go, how do you do this? I'm like, you're not going to believe it. There's a chapter. It's called Just Read Working With Others. You don't have to listen to me. Just read what it says and follow the instructions. So that's all I've ever done. So I just let them be heard. You know, and it talks about their religious experience could be way greater than mine. So if you listen to someone's story, it's almost like you got a blueprint to help this guy by just listening to his story. He may be resentful as you know what at God, or he could have brought up in a religious family. Who knows? He might not have had a mother, he might not have had a father. To me, it helps with everything from day one till he completes his process and doing 10 steps, and it's all asking for help for me. Everything starts with asking God for help. And it talks about in here, page 89, which I'm not a big page quote or whatever, but I quote this book, I'll tell you that. It says, we cooperate, we never criticize. So anybody want to get criticized, like, again, let's raise your hand. No one wants to get criticized. So Dale M. said, and that includes constructive criticism, by the way. And I'm like, okay, I knew what that was. You know, that's another form of what? Control. I'm going to control your ass and tell you what's wrong with your life. So he said, constructive criticism always sounds constructive to the person saying it, but never to the person that is listening to it. So it is so true. Like, someone starts constructively criticizing to me, and it's like, yeah, let's go do anything but what you're saying. So I don't usually come at him and say I'm a recovered alcoholic. Again, I try to look at the new man at his level. I try to relate to this guy. And the best way to relate to a new guy is find out what his issues are or his problems and share some of yours. I have nothing to hide. There is nothing, I mean, as you can tell, you know, there's some of the stuff I've shared here this weekend. I mean, I could have done without it. I can tell you that. It would have saved me a few tears for sure. But the good news is that, you know, there's a line in this chapter. It says, like, do you want to live on the firing line of life, or do you just want to take a back seat? You know what I mean? Like, I'm all set. I want, again, I want the whole thing, 1 through 12, whatever's there. I want that and more. And if there's extra dessert, I want that too. So I want to be on the firing line of life. So what does that mean? That means that for me, I'm willing to, number one, I have to take care of myself, which I've repeated. I hope I repeat it for literally the rest of my life. Because if I'm not taking care of myself, it's just another distraction to go and fix everybody else's stuff and not look at what I really need to look at, which is my life. So we all have these little things in our life that we want to change. Well, how does that happen? To me, it's 1 through 12, and then there may be some other stuff in the 11th step, and there's all sorts of suggestions. But more, it's paying attention to my thoughts, my needs, and another program that I spoke of before with Alan on, and really looking at, you know, the behaviors outside of this, which really, really, really helped me. So I remember one of my group members says, so I got this pigeon, and he goes, it was one of my first pigeons, and this is why I attend my Thursday night meeting. So he just said this, like, 2 or 3 years ago. He says, so I get the pigeon, I'm telling him this, that, and the other thing, and I tell him my whole story, and it was, you know, great, right? And then he goes back to his sponsor, he goes, so how to go with, the sponsor said, how to go with your pigeon? He goes, oh, it's awesome. I said, this, and this, and he goes, really? I got a question for you. What's his name? And he goes, I don't know. So, you know, you might want to get his name down before you, you know, lecture his ass about how great you've done in the big book step study. You know what I mean? So it's almost like you've lost someone before you even started. And that was a great lesson for me. The other part in this reading, it talks about when I used to call Dale and say, okay, here's a problem. I've already asked for help because I know that's the first thing he's going to say. And I think this is what I should do, but, you know, what do you think? Like, okay, let's hear the answer. And Dale's like, that's not going to happen. I don't know what the answer is. I'm like, yeah, but you've been sober for, like, decades. You must have come across this. Like, he would never give me the answer. He's like, well, go back to, you know, the ashes. Like, let's ask for help together, and we'll discuss it and talk about it. And it says, let him draw his own conclusions. It's not up to me to fix a pigeon. It will never be up to me to fix a pigeon. My job is to lay out the spiritual kit of tools. As he does the work, he gets something else in his toolbox. When he opens up his toolbox, when it's new, it's full of junk that we have to get rid of before you can start putting healthy tools in. So crap comes out, good tools come in. So that's what it's all about for me. It's a spiritual toolbox that we open, we take these tools out, and we apply them to ourselves to stop drinking. And that could be a four-step. At some point, you go, wow, I haven't thought about drinking in 30, 40 days, 50 days, whatever. I heard one guy sponsored, he asked me, like, what's God's will for me? And I gave him the answer clearly. I said, God's will for you, after we did the third step, it's to write your blank four-step, ace, like right now. That's it. You're going to get that answer from me, trust me, because I'm going to ask your ass all the time, where are you in your writing? He wanted to do it. I agreed to help. Of course I'm not going to leave this awkward silence and we're not going to talk about it. No, we're going to talk about it. You wanted to do this. And if you don't want to, I told you about the friend speech that I got. You know, the friend speech is very simple. And to be really articulate about it, what happened is Dale said, if you're not comfortable or I'm not comfortable, would just be friends. Well, I knew what that meant. There was no big secret behind that he wasn't going to be my sponsor anymore. That's what that really meant. So he wasn't playing around. If I wasn't going to follow that writing schedule, follow that 9-step schedule, we're going to be friends, which I couldn't afford myself. Like, I had way too much invested. I love this guy. I put him up on the biggest pedestal, but what I found out when I got to this step is he wasn't on a pedestal anymore. I was listening to his 10 steps. He was listening to mine. And there's this line in the book where we walk shoulder to shoulder like we all are here today. Nobody's any better or any worse. If you're the newest man or woman in this room, you are by far the most important person in the room. It's not these two people up here, I'll tell you that. If you're new, you are the most important person in the room and always will be for me. That's my, we'll say, experience. There's a little opinion in there maybe, but I try not to talk about my opinion. So it talks about self-sacrificing and constructive action, like, and that's what this is carrying this message. And like I've said before, there's a very big difference. When I got through this process, let me tell you, I didn't carry anything. I delivered it, whether you wanted it or not. I shoved more big books down people's throat. I was in Southie, like, I was almost looking forward to pissing a few people off, honestly. Because my life was literally threatened more times than one. Kids in South Boston settle it with this, and knives and guns and stuff like that. They don't like, listen, can we talk about our issues? No, that's not how it's done. And when it came to Boston, it was a whole different thing. So to me, it's about carrying the message. You know, it's not about ramming this down somebody's throat. As a matter of fact, I'll be to say it, I would say this to anybody. Hyannis had the worst reputation of any AA meeting for a long, long time. And it's my greatest pleasure to tell you that I know for me, when I had had enough and we moved to West Barnstable, it was the single best thing for Alcoholics, my program, and a lot of other men to move to the West Barnstable group. Because that's where this whole thing started. It didn't start in Hyannis. It started at Four Seas College in Barnstable. And it went from Four Seas to Hyannis, Hyannis to West Barnstable. That was done, I mean, I found the hall, put it this way. And it wasn't just me. It was a whole bunch of us that kind of had enough of some of the behavior in that meeting. I'm not proud to say it, but that's the truth. Long story, not step 12. Anyways. I'll get off my soapbox there for a minute. It talks about never speak from a moral spiritual hilltop. Like, when I talk to these men, I look at them as... I look like I have a daughter. She's an addict. How would I want someone to treat my daughter? You know what I mean? A respectful, humble, and caring way. So they're one of God's children. So am I. I talk to them, again, like I want to be talked to. I speak to an alcoholic like I want to speak to. If I am called, if I can pick up. My phone's blown up a few times here, and I'm not going to take the phone call now, but I will tell you this. It'll be an awesome ride home because I have tons of people to return phone calls to and check on their life because I care about these guys. Now, some of the guys that I've sponsored have just, they've done the work. You know what I mean? I'm not even really, back in the day they would call it, I'm not even really a sponsor, I'm just a trail guide. Go to this trail, then you go to that part of the trail and you go to that trail, and then guess what? You end up back to this. These 12 posts, you just follow them. And that's, you know, I kind of like that because Dale was the guy putting the things in front of me, and he checked on me the whole way. We communicated. We built a great relationship, and I always speak about him. You know, out of all, I don't know how many guys Dale sponsored. He must have, who knows? It's like Warren. No clue. It's like my favorite thing about carrying this message. You just have no idea how many people, just because you touch a few people, how many people they gonna touch. It's like it's the best pyramid scheme on the planet, but it's not a scheme. It's like, it's free, which alcoholics love, and it works. You know, like when everything else fails, this works. So it may not be and we don't have a monopoly on God. In our group, we have a Buddhist, we have a bunch of different guys, Catholics, and we don't badmouth a religion in our group. Like, we respect religion in our group. And if someone has a resentment and they start talking crap about it, then no big deal. That's their stuff. That is not my stuff. So, I've heard the word worry a couple times. So I don't worry about my pigeons. It's the last thing I do. They're big boys. They're adults. And I always say worrying is praying for what you don't want. You want to pray for what you don't want, then worry about it. It's almost like you'll make it happen. I'm done with, I stopped worrying along, it's wasted energy. It is, I can, you know, it's just something I learned a long time ago. I pray for what I want. I expect the results because I put the time in. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I'm not going to worry about it. Worrying is just, it, like I said, it's praying for what you don't want. I've always believed that very thing. I love to talk about the successes of the men that I've been able to help, you know, and how that has done is just a simple, you know, starts, for me, it usually starts with that third step. If these guys are going to be successful, and the more banged up they are, mm-hmm. the better. I mean, if they have, if they're on the street, I've taken a couple of drunks in, I've learned some hard lessons with that. One guy stole my Rolex. I guess I didn't need that. It wasn't that important. He got high with that, so whatever. But I also let this other kid stay at my house and literally call me from detox. His father called me first. I said he could call me, gave my number, called me every day from detox. Got out, came to Men's Big Book, went through the steps, wrote a monster four-step, made amends. Where is he today? Lives in Boston. He's a nurse. He's a father of two children. He's an unbelievable person. Just to watch his life take off. I have a lot of stories like that. Many, many stories. How did that all happen? That happened by finding an amazing sponsor and listening to him, following instructions from this man. And because of that, I always, when I talk to these guys, I let them know that this is something you don't rely on me. You need to build a relationship with a higher power to help you. And everything I've just said is everything I say to them. It's about them getting a relationship with a higher power to improve their life. You know, it's not up to Dennis, the great sponsor, to fix anything. You know, you want to fix your life. This is how you do it. And for me, it all starts with everything I've talked about here today. The alcoholic mind. I am what I think. If I'm thinking about bad things, that's what I'm going to get. If I'm thinking about moving forward and doing great things, that's what I'm going to get. I have, you change your mind, change your heart. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to change who you are, then I have to change my thinking. And that's what this process does. And to watch somebody else do it on their own is the greatest thing. It talks about don't participate in quarrels. Well, what was my favorite thing to do? Control, control, control. Again, the more I'm in somebody else's life over here and over here, and oh, can you believe they did this and that person did that? I'm not looking at myself. And that's the key to me, is to look at self, help others to look at self if they want. And if they don't want, another thing I really learned in the Men's Big Book is that you can do the other thing. And I was like, what's the other thing? And they're like, suffer. You can suffer. That's what you're going to do. And I'm like, yeah, I've done enough of that. So, like it says, the rule for me is I stay on the firing line of life the best I can, when I can, take care of myself. I have the best group in Alcoholics Anonymous. I will go anywhere to carry this message. I don't care where it is. If I can at all possibly do that, I will certainly do it at the a blink of an eye, mm-hmm. you know. And that means, like, so we have some older members in our group, and I try to check up on them. I know I really haven't talked about the principles, but it's hard to squeeze all this in this amount of time, which is, it is what it is. But my job is to be maximum usefulness to other people and the people around me, my family. I think I was a very good son to my parents. I know they're proud of all of us. And we gave them not just like a good send-off, but, you know, all these little coin phrases and lines in this book, you know, add up to one thing, that if I stay on this path, and that's the key, is staying on this path and being in my Thursday night meeting and doing whatever it takes to stay sober, that I'm going to be unharmed. I'm not, it's like I said, this isn't just about not drinking. This is about touching lives, helping people, try to be a really good person, the best of my ability, make mistakes. Everyone, mistakes will always just be a part of life. It's just perspective. And the biggest thing that these 12 steps have done for me is changed everything. All my values were shiny things and this, that, and they're all nice, but they do not keep you sober, and they are not, they will not, I've sponsored a ton of rich guys. So the last thing I will say about this is that we have this ability, right, to help people. I told this to Monica, I go, psychologists, if you're a psychologist, no offense, any of these professions, no offense, but this is what it says in the book, you can help when nobody else can. Mm-hmm. Doctors, psychologists, and one of our group members said this the other night, it was literally hilarious, and he doesn't know who's really in our group. He's like, you know, doctors, they can suggest and this and give you medication and this, that, and the other thing, but they're not going to help you. Lawyers, no, they're not going to help you. We have two lawyers and two doctors running 4 steps in our room, like, presently. And I'm like, I'm not telling them. I think it's hilarious, but I don't want them to edit his shares either. But, you know, they're just drunks. That's all. They were just alcoholics, and they're attracted to the message, and I hope they continue on, because I think it'll be a great perspective to add to our group and to Alcoholics Anonymous. But in closing, I will tell you this. I owe my life to the people like mm-hmm. you that are in this room. And my girl, Veronica, next to me, she's been a great part of my life. I'm humbled to be able to be here to carry this message. And to thank you guys for helping me heal a little bit. So God's been giving me...